Once, I was guilty of a minor violation of the strict monastery rules at Balam. Those dwelling upon this stern cliff frown upon idle walks. No matter where a distant visitor had come from, and how great is his desire to familiarize himself with the island, he cannot indulge in this tremendous pleasure. I say tremendous, because the island is truly beautiful, and its landscapes are splendid. Customarily, every pilgrim at Balam practices obedience. He must go to church, pray, take meals, then work, and finally rest. No time is allotted for walks and contemplation of nature. However, one time, I managed to walk around the entire island in one night in the company of three men and two ladies, and forever capture in my memory the divine landscape comprising in the pale half-light of the northern summer night the wild cliffs, dark ravines, and quiet settlements of the Russian Mount Athos. The settlements are particularly lovely, with their imperturbable silence. An Annunciation settlement on the islet of Cernachan is the most striking of them all. It is populated by hermits, who find the general severity of Balam life insufficient. They retire to Annunciation settlement, where the overseers guard their seclusion against any invasion by secular men. People retired from the world burn their candles here, even as they tirelessly pray for the world. All is eternal Lent here, eternal silence and prayer. Not knowing the direction of the Balam paths, we came to the strait separating Cernachan from the main island, and, captivated by the thick ferns with which the local bay was overgrown, sat down to rest and talk about people who had chosen this obscure location as the place for their pious, contemplative lives. "What sort of people, with what powers and what past, come here to bury themselves alive?" one of my companions exclaimed. "I cannot imagine them as anything other than some sort of titans or warriors of the spirit." "Yes, you are right," another one said. "They are indeed warriors, but they are warriors strong in their destitute. They are like grains that germinated and sprouted." "What happened while they were germinating?" Our companion smiled and replied, "While they were germinating, they lay by roads, suffocated in the weeds, and came near perishing, like you, me, and the rest of the world, until the wind caught them up and dropped them into good soil." "You speak as someone who knows one of the people who had the power to bury himself alive in this wilderness." "Yes, I think I truly have known such a man." "Was he smart?" "Yes." "And sensible?" "Him? Yes, of course. I do not dare judge, but I was very fond of him and respect his memory." "Did he die?" "Yes." "Here?" "Not far from here," our companion replied with another quiet smile. "The life of such a man always excites great interest in me." "Me too, me too," others chimed in. The ladies were even more interested than the men, and one of them, a beautiful blonde with dark eyes, addressing our companion, "You know, you would oblige us all greatly if you tell us the story of this hermit you know, here in this quiet wilderness where we find ourselves so suddenly." The other lady and the rest of us joined her, and the one to whom the request was addressed agreed to fulfill it and began. About 20 years ago, when I was a schoolboy and attended one of the Petersburg schools, my late mother, her sister, my Aunt Olga Petrovna, and I lived in the house of another wealthy aunt from my father's side. Even though the latter is no longer with us, I shall not give out her real name and call her Anna Lvovna. Her house still stands in the same spot, but at the time it was known as one of the largest in the street, whereas now it is one of the smallest. Enormous new structures have obscured it, and no one points at it any longer the way they did at the time when my story began. Having started my story with the house instead of the people, I must be consistent and tell you what sort of a house it was. It was a tremendous house, tremendous in many respects. It was built on stone, with three stories and three courtyards, nested within one another, surrounded on all sides with identical three-story wings. It had a gloomy, gray, almost prison-like air. It produced the most oppressive impression. This house was a portion of my aunt's dowry when she married her not very distant cousin, at the time a very promising, dazzling young man of society, who nevertheless ended up very deftly wasting away his own insignificant and his wife's significant fortune, and reached for the remains of her dowry, which was the house. The intentions of my aunt's husband became clear in Paris, where the couple was residing at the time, and where Anna Lvovna believed herself a dazzling beauty capable of impressing all of society. If only the society had not been distracted by a certain lady of the underworld. The struggle against the lady in question